My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. You meet someone, you fall in love, and that deep and abiding sense of this is the one for me leads you to the altar. After the honeymoon, life ensues, along with all of the ups and downs that everyone faces. At some point, the challenges may seem unbearable. The communication with your partner breaks down, and the once powerful feelings of love that brought you together seem to be slipping away. Can your relationship be saved? Is it worth saving? And what path do you need to follow to answer these emotionally charged and potentially life-changing questions? My guests this week on Destination Unlimited, psychotherapists and relationship counselors Linda and Charlie Bloom, face these questions and much more in their own relationship. Linda and Charlie have worked with individuals, couples, groups, and organizations since 1975. They've lectured and taught at the Esalen Institute, Kripalu Center, 1440 Multiversary, the California Institute of Integral Studies, Omega Institute, and many more. They've offered seminars around the world and have authored 3 best-selling books, including 101 Things I Wish I Knew When I Got Married, Simple Lessons to Make Love Last, Happily Ever After, and 39 Other Myths About Love. They join me this week to discuss their raw, open, and honest book about their personal relationship challenges and how they address them, That Which Doesn't Kill Us, How One Couple Became Stronger at the Broken Places. Please welcome to Destination Unlimited, Linda and Charlie Bloom. Welcome.
I'm so glad you invited us. I'm delighted to be here with you.
Great to be here, Victor. Thanks.
And we're grateful for you sharing your story because I'm sure there are so many out there who need to hear about your relationship, what you did to make it work, and to employ those things into their own relationship. So your book is told from the point of view of his story, her story, and your story. Let's begin by briefly exploring each of your lives before you met. Linda, go first.
Well, I fell pretty hard for Charlie very early after meeting him, and I was just mad about him, just crazy about him. I thought he was good father material, he was interesting, he was good looking, he had values that I admired, and I fell hard. And we got married 4 years after we met. We were young. We were in our early 20s. And then the kids came. We had a few kids in a row. And we lived in a little tiny New England town. It was a sleepy little village. And we had somewhat of an ordinary life with ordinary problems. And we felt, both of us, a hunger for more. And so we ended up taking this very powerful personal growth training, and it instigated reaching high. And I had this idea that I wanted to move to California, and Charlie got offered a job to work for this personal growth company. And I didn't read the fine print. And when we got out here to California, my life turned upside down. The agreements that we had in place about mutually rearing the children and supporting each other's career development all got thrown out. And Charlie's career with the corporate world took over and dominated our family for a period of years. And it was a difficult time for me because I didn't want to be in the traditional role, in the traditional mommy role. A lot of people thrive in that, but I'm really quite much more inclined to be a career woman. And the fact that he was working an 80-hour week, I didn't feel like I could do very much significantly with my career. And boy, did we fight. We had terrible fights because I wanted him to quit that demanding job, but he loved his job. And so the book is got all the gory details in there about how awful it was when we were gridlocked. But fortunately, it has a happy ending.
And Charlie, before you join in and share your end of that story, how old were your children at the time that this happened?
When we moved to California, my daughter was 18 months old. And the boys were 6 and 4.
Okay, so you had three children, yeah, including...
They were small. Yeah, they weren't in school yet. So we had a bunch of babies. Yeah.
Charlie, go ahead. What would you like to add to that?
Well, you had asked about before we met. I grew up in Massachusetts outside of Boston, and Linda and I met in Boston when we were both undergraduates at different colleges, and we were young. We were 21 years old, and I certainly had no intentions, conscious or otherwise, of looking ahead at any of the women that I dated in terms of long-term material. At the time, I didn't realize that that's sort of how most women look to the guys that they're dating. So if somebody had asked me when we first met, and we really did hit it off immediately, but if somebody had asked me, well, do you see this person as somebody that you'd spend your whole life with? My answer would be like, how am I supposed to know? Like, that's something that's so distant from anything that I'm consciously even thinking about. You know, I don't know. Linda was quite a bit clearer about her intentions for the future of our relationship than I was. But 4 years later, we got married, and things happened pretty quickly. We both went back to college, got our graduate degrees, and then moved from Boston, where we were in school, to Connecticut, where I got my first job after graduate school. So. Yeah, my work has always been in a helping profession. I was doing some teaching for a while, and then I got a degree in psychiatric social work and started worked in a clinic and had a private practice for a while. We're both trained as psychotherapists, and our specialty eventually became relationship counseling.
Now, individually, what strengths from your childhood and into your teens and before you met, what strengths and what weaknesses did each of you have that you brought into this relationship with you?
Well, I was a parental child, so I grew up really fast, matured really fast, and handled a lot as a kid. So I came into this partnership highly responsible, strong in commitment, and I had a special signature strength of being strong in vision, because I feel like I endured a fair amount in my family of origin, and one of the things that got me through the hard times was imagining when I'm an adult, when I make my own money, when I'm on my own, I will be free to make my own choices that suit me and get out from under the microscope and out from under the control and out from under, you know, all this caretaking that I was doing in my family. So in a way, I feel like that really served me during this difficult time, that I could hold fast to the vision that we will come through, we will come through, we will come through, and that I could shoulder so much responsibility when Charlie was on the road 3 weeks out of every month.
And Charlie?
Yeah, you know, we came from extremely different backgrounds and develop very, very different personalities, which is one of the things that I think that we bring to our work that's really valuable, because we do a lot of our work together when we teach and when we write and when we work with couples. So we're able to bring not only the perspective of the male and the female, but different personality traits that we have that are very complimentary, but as you know, you probably know, and as I think anybody who's been married any amount of time knows, that those complementary traits can be the very things that drive you crazy.
Give us an example, please.
Okay, well, Linda's really a very detailed person. She's great at seeing the fine points. She's great at being able to recognize the important details that need to be attended to things, the minutia. And it's wonderful because I'm not. And I have more of a global, broad perspective on things. It's like she calls it having the difference between having eagle vision and having what?
Mouse
vision. Yeah. Mm. She's the mouse, I'm the eagle, and they're both necessary. But what she sees is very different than what I see. And it's very easy to assume that what I see or what one person sees is the perception of reality. And what we have both been incredibly challenged to do over the years is to continually remember that, you know, it's like the story of the blind man and the elephant. Everybody's got a different piece of it, but nobody has the whole piece.
Sure.
So to remember that, yeah, what I'm seeing is valid, it's legitimate, it's accurate, but no more so than Linda's. And hers is no less valid than mine, that we're both seeing different pictures. And it's really easy to forget that and get into conflict about who's right.
My guests this week on Destination Unlimited, Charlie and Linda Bloom. They're the authors of That Which Doesn't Kill Us, How One Couple Became Stronger at the Broken Places. We'll be back with more of Charlie and Linda after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hi, this is Julie Geigel.
And I'm Susan Schuler.
And I'm Lori Walker.
And we are
the Psychic Angel Channelers
from Angel Talk Tuesday.
Tune in every week at 10 a.m. Eastern on OMTimesRadio.com.
The angels have heard your call and are here to help.
Are you ready to receive?
Bathe in the beautiful vibrational frequency to help you heal, expand, and remember your magnificence with Angel Talk Tuesday.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
Ugh, what are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
What are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. It's been a long time since we've had an adventure in the forest.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
You're right. I should get out.
Yeah, the forest is not that far away.
Hey, Mom!
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guests this evening, Charlie and Linda Bloom, the authors of That Which Doesn't Kill Us, How One Couple Became Stronger at the Broken Places. And before the break, you were talking about the strengths that you both bring into the relationship. And Linda, you were about to tell us what you bring into the relationship.
Yes, I have been called a flaming extrovert because I figure out what I'm thinking and what I'm feeling while I'm talking. And Charlie is quite introverted, and where he goes under stress is he gets quiet and he needs meditation time and he goes inside. And this was a source in the past, not now, a source of conflict for us, because when I was anxious about something or concerned about something or challenged about something, I wanted to process it through and talk about it. And I would often find that Charlie wasn't available. When he was a corporate guy, he was working all the time, most of the time, and I didn't have access to him even by phone when he was on the road, because he worked very long hours and he would just call from the road during a meal break. And it would be so frustrating because we would have this tiny little conversation and I would have just scads of things that I wanted to say. And then when he would come home, he would have been in a class full of 60, 70, 80 people for 5 days. And then he just wanted to be alone and be quiet. And I had been waiting for him to come back all week so I could talk about what was going on with me. And so under the conditions that we lived in New England, when we had more of a sleepy life, not very challenged, not very challenging, not very growth inducing, the difference didn't show up that much. But when we were stressed by the lifestyle that we were living when he had the corporate job, the differences really became very apparent, and the discrepancy and the distance between us was high during that time.
Let's get back to when you first got together. What were the things that made you fall in love with each other?
Well, Charlie, he really was solid in himself. He knew who he was, where he was going. And I admired that I could tell right away he was a low maintenance guy. So you remember that I talked about being a parental child, and I felt like I was doing a lot of caretaking in my family, and to have somebody that was so independent was really appealing to me. The fact that he was adorable with his blue eyes and tall and buff, attractive, sexy guy, really, I swooned over that, and that we had interests in common. That right from the very beginning, we were talking about service and personal growth and, you know, how do people learn and grow and maintain their gains. And I found that, you know, really compelling, because I was passionate about what I was learning in school, studying anthropology and sociology. And there was enough overlap in our interests, not just activities, but the mental interests, that I felt very, very drawn to him. And I sometimes think about the day we met when his wallet fell open and I saw the baby picture of his little sister at 3 years old, beautiful baby picture with her curly hair. And when I looked at that picture, I said, this is such a good man. This is good father material. He's carrying his little sister's baby picture in his wallet.
Wonderful. And Charlie?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and it caused me to kind of reflect on what was it exactly. And you know, the thing that first came to my mind was Linda was obviously a very no BS person, and that she wore her feelings on her sleeve, and I tended to be a lot more circumspect in terms of revealing what was going on with me. But she was right out there. She was very authentic and expressive about what mattered to her, and I could tell that we had similar values. And one of the things that I picked up on right away was that she was really into me.
Mm.
And I liked that. I tended to be a lot more of a cool customer in terms of revealing my desires and needs and preferences. I didn't want to give people too much information about my inner life. And she was the opposite. And there's a part of me that really knew that that would be good for me, to have that influence in my life. And, you know, I really did love the feeling of being cherished by her. And I could tell early on, you know, just like that I meant a lot to her. And I had my own issues with my own attractiveness or my own desirability or my own value. And it's like, boy, she just really challenged a lot of my own self-doubts and insecurity. And that's one of the ways in which both Linda and I have come to, you know, the subtitle of the book is How One Couple Became Stronger at the Broken Places. And we both learned how to mine the gold that each one of us brought to each other to repair and heal the broken parts in ourselves that we brought into the relationship.
Absolutely.
And that was probably the most compelling aspect of my attraction to her.
So you have this wonderful couple, the old opposites attract applied here.
Yeah.
You had this wonderful relationship.
Yeah.
Children came. You had the move to California. And then the issue started. What were the first warning signs that your marriage was in trouble?
Oh, my irritability. I was so resentful. I used to call his job the mistress. I said, you love her more than you love me. You spend more time with her than you do with me. I feel like the old shoe cast aside. I was so resentful about how in love with his job he was. It was really compelling. And I had a lot of ambivalence about it because on the one hand, I was admiring the incredible transformative experiences that he was catalyzing in these personal growth trainings. And I was fascinated by that because it's such a strong area of interest for me and always has been. But on the other hand, it was just too much of a good thing that it was so wonderful for him. And I remember him saying a few times, I've never wanted anything more. And he was talking about his job, about finding job charming. And I would feel like, well, what am I, chopped liver, do you know? And I would feel so devalued. And it was grating on me. It was irritating to me. And I know that some women do it better. Some women are much more independent, and some women, you know, don't need as much connection time. They don't need as much acknowledgement as I do, but I'm a real connector. And so my irritability and resentment was spilling out all over, and it was a big red flag that we were in trouble.
Charlie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Linda noticed it quite a bit earlier than I did. But she did bring it to my attention. And I was so enthralled and enamored with my new career. I had been working as a psychotherapist for a few years, and now I was facilitating large group seminars. And there's something that's incredibly compelling about being in the front of the room with a whole room full of people who are relating to you as an expert. And I felt like I was so enthralled with that I really was underestimating just how wounded our relationship was becoming, because I was neglecting it. I was just so caught up in my new career, and rationalizing that, you know, well, this is not going to last forever, and I really need to give this my all. And at some point, you know, hopefully in the not too distant future, I'm going to, we'll be able to have a more conventional life. But it was over 5 years of going through increasing difficulty, suffering, and symptoms that were showing up in our relationship, in the family, with the kids, that were becoming increasingly harder to deny. And at some point, things came to a head.
Did you seek individual or couples counseling?
You know, we didn't. And there's a reason that we didn't. I had been in the field long enough before we got in trouble to know that some therapists are haughty and arrogant enough to pass judgment on a relationship and make comments like, this is not workable. You're sacrificing too much. And I was afraid to go to a therapist for fear. I was so on the edge. I was just hanging on by my fingernails that if a professional person told me it isn't going to work, you might as well leave, that it would be too much for me to be able to hold on to my vision that we were going to come through. And although I didn't do individual therapy, and although we didn't do couples therapy, we did go to some really excellent workshops. And I can't say enough about the good help that we got with the couples workshops that we went to, because they gave me some guidance about things that I can do, particularly keeping my attention on myself and getting it off of Charlie about what he was doing or saying or not saying, because I really got into the position of being a victim of his work addiction. And the people who helped us when we did the couples workshops were a profoundly important ingredient in our being able to come through this dark passage.
Their book is called That Which Doesn't Kill Us, How One Couple Became Stronger at the Broken Places. Charlie and Linda Bloom, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about your work.
Well, they can go on Amazon and order it there. They can go on Barnes & Noble and order it there. If they like to give business to their local bookstore, the bookstore will order it. And some people really get a kick, like me, out of a signed by the author copy. And so they can contact us. And if they go to our website, Bloomwork, there's a phone number and an email address. They can get one from us.
And that's bloomwork.com. Is that correct?
Correct.
And we'll be back with more of Charlie and Linda Bloom after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
This is OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Are you in an interfaith relationship and thinking of getting married? For 18 years, Reverend Lori Sue Brockway has been creating personalized, loving, and romantic ceremonies for couples of all faiths and cultural backgrounds. Reverend Lori Sue's sensitivity to the needs of interfaith couples is reflected in the compassionate and inclusive way she addresses the concerns of parents and families. Reverend Lori Sue is also the author of several best-selling books on interfaith weddings and wedding vows. Selected as one of the top interfaith officiants by New York Magazine, Reverend Lori Sue serves couples in the New York metropolitan area and beyond. Find out more at her website, yourinterfaithwedding.com.
Have you bought into the idea that you have to work hard for your money, that business is hard? I will share some dynamic access consciousness tools to get you out of your own way so you can create a business that actually succeeds. Join me, Simone Millicers, on The Joy of Business at 4 p.m. Mondays Eastern.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human, and she's got this little toy she's always playing with all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese. And guess what? Egg rolls showed up. Like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guests this evening, Charlie and Linda Bloom, the authors of That Which Doesn't Kill Us, How One Couple Became Stronger at the Broken Places. So what were some of the low points? You have the issue started to accumulate. What were the low points in your journey?
Well, there was a time when Charlie came home from having taught a course, and I was just hanging on till we could spend some time together. And he told me that he and one of the other trainers in his department were both going to take their sons on a camping trip. And I had been anxious to see him, but I thought, well, that's a beautiful thing, the father-son thing. I need to get my preference out of the way. But I asked him, would you at least call and talk to me on the phone because I've missed you so much? And he was away for some days, and I never got a call. And every day I was getting more agitated. And when he finally called, he put our son on the phone, and I talked to him, and I put Dad back on, but my son hung up. And by the time Charlie came back from the camping trip, I had locked the bedroom door, something that I had never done before. And I had put a sign on it that said, go to a hotel, I'm done. Mm. And to Charlie's credit, he didn't leave and go to a hotel. This was a few years into the stress of his demanding schedule, because I think if he had left that night when I was so agitated, that could have been the last moment for us. I just was at my wit's end. But he talked to me through the door for a long time before I finally opened it, and he put his arms around me and he said, we were so far deep into the woods, there was no phone anywhere. I couldn't possibly call you, because what I had made up in my mind is that he hadn't bothered to call, that I was just, you know, insignificant. I wasn't even on his priority list. And I had convinced myself of that because of all the evidence that I had in the file that I was keeping on him.
The expression you just used, so far deep in the woods, that's really where you were coming from.
Yeah, I was lost in the woods too. He was camping in the, you know, the real woods. I was just losing my path and losing my way.
Now, you put that sign on the door. Yeah. What other mistakes did you collectively, the two of you, make in the process of what was going on?
Oh, boy. Well, we wrote a whole book about that. Our first book is called 101 Things I Wish I Knew When I Got Married. And it's about a whole series of mistakes that we made out of our ignorance or refusal to accept the requirements of real successful committed partnerships. I would say the number one mistake that I made was to underestimate grossly the need to pay attention and provide support and nurturance to a marriage. And I fell under the same illusion that a lot of people that we work with have fallen under, which is that once you get married and you have established and affirmed your commitment to each other, then you can kind of go on cruise control and then redirect this attention that you've been giving to the relationship to other things. And boy, is that a mistake, because the problem that we encounter when we're dealing with couples more so than any other problem, and of course there's a lot of symptoms that come up in different areas, but the underlying problem is one of neglect. Mm-hmm. It's not because people are not necessarily doing the right things. They're just not doing enough of them. They're not accepting the fact that a relationship, particularly a committed partnership, is a living organism, and like any other living organism, requires care, support, nurturance, ongoing attention. And I really took my marriage for granted. I assumed that Linda's, you know, loyalty was infinite and it would never end. And even though she had complaints, that she'd get over it. And in the meantime, I can just do what I need to do to further my career, because after all, that's my way of supporting the family, which is a wonderful rationalization, but it's not true, because it's not enough.
They say the shoemaker's children have no shoes. The therapists, are not communicating. They're not listening to each other.
Right, yeah. The therapist children need to go to a therapist because they're not getting their emotional shoes met.
How important is truly listening to your partner in situations like that?
It's huge. It's huge.
It's probably the most important part of attention is not so much what do you say, but what do you hear? Mm-hmm. And how do you respond to what you hear?
And it was one of the reasons that I was suffering so much during that time. I was so lonely for Charlie. And I wanted to be heard and seen and validated and acknowledged. I wanted him to tell me that he still loved me, that he still valued me, that he saw that I was keeping a nice home and doing the best job that I could with the kids, and to thank me for all that I was handling at home. I didn't want to be taken for granted. And he got so ego inflated during the time when he was teaching these courses, because the students just thought that he walked on water. Do you know that he was some kind of a holy guru? And he'd come home and he'd say, what's for lunch? And I would try to get him to, you know, come back to reality. And I'd say, take out the garbage. Do you know, he really thought that the rules and the laws that pertain to other people didn't pertain to us. And to answer your question about the mistakes, my biggest mistake is that I let my anger and resentment so consume me that in the little time that we had together, we weren't making that time count, because I was so marinating in the resentment. And so it would come out in judgment and blame and criticism. You know, what's wrong with you? You seem like you don't want to do family. Why did you even get married and have children? You seem like you just want to be a career guy. I wouldn't be attracted to you if I met you now. I certainly wouldn't marry you. And so when I got some good help, when we went to these couples seminars, I realized that I was working against my own best interests, and that I really needed to get a grip on the anger that I was burning in. My mind was on fire. And I learned forgiveness meditation. And so I would prepare when he would come back from being away, and I would try to soften my heart and open my heart so that we could make the little time that we did have together really count.
You know, listening to one another is such an important skill for couples to develop. And the other part of that, which I know from my own relationship, was not getting connected to childhood feelings that would elicit a response of negativity. For example, without going into specific details in my own life, that when Lori Sue would say something to me, that I didn't hear a critical voice from the past, and the same thing with her, that she didn't hear a critical voice from the past, and that we're actually relating to one another and not to our parents at that point.
I think that that is such a universal factor in the breakdown of relationships, that it's something that practically characterizes practically every foundational difficulty that couples have. It's the failure or the inability to recognize that when I get triggered because of certain things that my partner is doing or saying, that it's really not about them, but it's more about what's getting activated in me that's incomplete from my past previous experiences, particularly with my parents and family of origin. And that's why when, you know, people talk a lot about marriage relationships require a lot of work. And that's true, they do. But what most people don't know is, well, what exactly does that mean? What is the work? And the work for most of us has to do with diffusing some of those connections that activate our defensive responses when we get triggered. Yes. And they come mostly from the past.
Mm-hmm.
That's the work.
Linda, did you want to add to that? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Well, just the more that we can take that on seriously, the less activated we're going to be when those triggers get ignited. And the triggers don't necessarily stop, but when we become more conscious of where they're coming from, our reactivity towards our partner diminishes.
And not being listened to and not being heard activated old family of origin pain for me about being ignored and being saddled with a lot of responsibility. Just handle it, and I don't want to hear any complaints about it. Do you know? So I was being rewounded in the place that I was already sore. And I knew full well that being ignored was a big trigger for me. But just that conscious awareness wasn't enough to do very much about it. I had to have something more active, more deliberate, more intentional, something I could commit myself to. The awareness wasn't enough. It was a good beginning, but I needed the forgiveness meditation and to cultivate the warm heart of compassion and to hold him not as a bad man or a selfish man or an egoed out man, inflated guy, to see that he was just lost.
How important is it for couples individually to express their needs to one another?
it goes without saying that it's one of the most important things. And maybe, I know I think we've got a break coming up, but maybe afterwards we can talk a little bit about why that is so important.
And also perhaps why it is so difficult for people to express
why it is so difficult to do it well. Yeah, because you have to talk about that
vulnerability
as well. Why is that so difficult for many of us to do? And what can we do to get over that?
My guests are Charlie and Linda Bloom. They're the authors of That Which Doesn't Kill Us, How One Couple Became Stronger at the Broken Places. We'll be back with Charlie and Linda after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
Ugh, what are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
What are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. It's been a long time since we've had an adventure in the forest.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
You're right. I should get out.
Yeah, the forest is not that far away.
Hey, Mom!
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guests this week, Charlie and Linda Bloom. They're the authors of That Which Doesn't Kill Us, How One Couple Became Stronger at the Broken Places. So before the break, we were talking about how important it is for each person in a relationship to express their needs. And sometimes it's really difficult, isn't it?
Sometimes it's scary because you have to get vulnerable when you talk about your needs. And I got myself into all kind of trouble when I was coming with tone in my voice, when I was demanding or commanding, and that does not invite cooperation from the other person to try to meet some of your needs. And when I could get a grip on myself and I could say, I'm lonely for you. I feel so disconnected. We need to get off the merry-go-round, you know, stop the world and all the demands that are on us. And when the kids go off to school, I just want to be alone with you. I need some quiet time with you. And if you need to go and be by yourself for a little while first so you can bring your full self to me, that I would say it in a gentle way and not a demanding way. And that would be scary for me to do because I might be refused. And I saw refusal as rejection. And when we had an agreement in place that we would use the refusals sparingly and that we would always give a rain check if we had to say no, that we weren't really available to come full heart, and at the first possible moment he would try his best to be there with me in a meaningful way so we could be emotionally and physically hooked up with each other, because I was suffering and he was suffering because of my judgment about his absences. And so we learned to make the time count when I could speak from that vulnerable, risky place about what I needed from him to carry on one more week.
Sometimes emotional availability is even more important than physical availability, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, I would say that a lot of the time when people are looking for a deeper, more intimate connection, the impulse is to go towards a physical sexual connection, which can be fine, but it's not necessary. If what you really need at the time is an emotional connection, it may require something different and something more than just initiating a physical connection. Because if it's a deep emotional connection, then a physical or sexual connection can be satisfying briefly, but at the end, you know, you're going to be left with the same feeling of incompleteness if you haven't really gone to that place of deep, true, intimate, emotional, vulnerable connection.
Can all marriages be fixed?
No, not all marriages should be fixed. There really are some couples who are mismatched pairs. And we sometimes have couples come to us who they've been suffering from a long time and they're reluctant to put the time and effort into their possible repair of their relationship because they say, well, we may end up splitting up anyway. What's the point of doing these months of couples counseling? And I tell everybody the same thing. It's going to serve you even if your relationship doesn't make it in your relationships in the future, so you don't take the same unskillful patterns with you into the future. And this breakdown might end up being a breakthrough instead of a breakup if you do your own work. And if both of you are doing your own work and learning your skills, up-leveling your skill set, and cultivating the qualities that you need to strengthen in yourself to be eligible for a healthy, wholesome relationship, you can only win. Even if you decide at the end of that time that you're not meant to be together, you can let go with some loving kindness, not taking parting shots at the other person. And you won't be haunted with the if onlys we had done that couples counseling or we'd taken that workshop, if I had only done my work. Because sometimes people leave a relationship and you know what the statistics are for the second marriages, they're worse than the first. The first marriage is 50% of them not making it. And at the second marriage, the 60% are not making it. So they're still not learning about the skills and the qualities.
You know, it's interesting. You talked about the first marriage breaking up and the second marriage not working out. There's a fascinating story I heard on CBS Radio recently about an Ohio couple who, after many years of marriage and 8 kids, found that their relationship was so untenable that they divorced. And things were so bad that they actually had to have 2 birthday parties for each child because they couldn't stand being together. And they shared that each of them independently after the divorce sought counseling, she for depression and he for alcohol. alcoholism, and that eventually they were able to be around each other. And then 4 years after the divorce, at a Christmas celebration, he proposed, she accepted, they got married again, and they were more deeply in love than ever before. How important is it for each partner in a troubled relationship to take ownership of their own issues and seek healing?
Well, I would say it's the most important piece of a repair. And without that, I would say that there is slim to no chance of really resolving whatever differences exist. Because until both people are willing to focus their attention on their part in the breakdown of the relationship, then there's going to be an automatic tendency to hold the other person completely responsible. And the problem with that isn't just that it's not true, because in every, and I mean that without exception, in every case that we've ever dealt with, both people have played some part in the breakdown, even though, I mean, it's not necessarily 50-50. But even if it's 95-5, the challenge is always to look at, what's my part here? What is it that I have to learn here? How did I contribute to things going where they went? It's not that it's my fault, but we both have played a part. It's been a kind of a co-conspiracy, consciously or unconsciously. And until I can own my responsibility, my part in what's happened up to this point, I have virtually zero power to influence where it's going to go in the future. So part of the price that we've got to be willing to pay to have some effective influence in our in the future of our relationship is to take responsibility for what it is that and how it is that we've been such that this is where we are right now. It doesn't take the other person off the hook. It simply acknowledges that we both have played a part.
Now, this couple spent 4 years apart from their divorce to getting back together, going through their own therapies. Do you think it's therapeutic for couples to spend time apart?
I think it is good, and especially when they've gotten embroiled into nasty patterns, to disengage, to check themselves out, to get away from their reactivity, to calm down, to think more clearly, because it's so obvious what the other person is doing and not doing and saying and not saying that's adding to the suffering. It's very difficult to self-observe and to do what Charlie is saying about take responsibility, not fault-finding and not blame of self, but to take responsibility for the part that we ourselves have played. And sometimes you have to disengage from the relationship for a while. Doesn't necessarily have to be years or months or even weeks, but time keep the attention on self and not to be so emotionally overwrought that you can't think straight. Because the only thing that the reptilian brain, you know, that part that's the primitive brainstem part, knows is fight, flight, or freeze. We need to get away from that emergency and feel safer so that the neocortex is working, where the creative thinking goes on, where the possibilities go on, and that's how we can become more responsible about the part that we've played. And it's not neat, like 50-50, it's 60-40, 80-20, 95-5, but there always is a part that we've played, and that's where the power to make a change is, because we can't change the other person. We only change the side of the dance that we're doing. Doing, and that might invite them to dance with us differently.
In That Which Doesn't Kill Us, you use the term mature love. What is mature love?
It's what some people refer to as emotional intelligence. It has to do with a lot of things that we've been speaking about today. The capacity to put another person's needs and concerns on a front burner, take your own temporarily off of the front burner. It has to do with meeting the challenge of being responsible to yourself and for yourself, and at the same time to the relationship and for the relationship. So it involves, you know, implementing and integrating the core values that promote healthy living.
What would you like readers to take away from That Which Doesn't Kill Us?
I would hope that people who read it could see that even a relationship that's in a lot of trouble, and ours certainly was, and the book depicts it in gory detail, that there can be an ember of love under the cold ash. And that if you can fan that ember of love into a flame, that you can have a beautiful relationship on the other side. Keep your attention on yourself, learn to do your own work, get some good support like we got. It makes all the difference in the world. And you can make the descent into those hell realms and come up even higher than you ever were before. Because crises are underrated. And when your life is just smashed to smithereens, you can reassemble it in a way that even fits you better than it did before.
Sage and loving advice from Charlie and Linda Bloom. They're the authors of That Which Doesn't Kill Us. Please share with our listeners one more time where they can get your book and find out more about your wonderful work.
Best way is to go to our website, www.bloomwork.com, B-L-O-O-M-W-O-R-K. You can not only find out how to get the book, and there's a lot of other information on there. We have hundreds, literally hundreds of blogs that we have links to. We have video clips, and
we do Facebook Live every Thursday at 12:30, and they're all archived. And our name, address, and phone and email is on there. Sometimes people want to do phone or Skype counseling with us. And occasionally people fly in from out of state and spend a day or two doing an intensive with us.
Anyway, it's all on the website.
Charlie and Linda, thank you so much for joining us. I know your information that you've shared, your book, which is a wonderful book, will be helpful and maybe save many, many marriages. So thank you for your work and for joining us.
Thank you for having us. I enjoyed the interview.
Thanks.
And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.